Good morning and welcome to Diakonti View. I'm Peter Newman. A couple of concerts in our area upcoming this week. There is a Friday concert in Astoria, a Sunday concert in Rockaway Beach, the concert courtesy of the North Oregon Coast Symphony Orchestra. And joining us is the conductor of the orchestra, Corey Peterson. Thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
I want to talk about the concert, but first I want to talk about about you and the business of conducting. You obviously enjoy it. How'd you get into it?
Well, I think it was by mistake, actually. Oh. Started off in college. It was grad school and it was at WSU. I took one course of conducting. And the poor conductor, the guy that was teaching the conducting class, was the main conductor of the university. And he passed away abruptly by my third lesson. And I only had two classes with him, and that was it. And from that point forward, I had no other conducting experiences, and then moved out on the coast and began with my teaching career in Jewel as the band director. And over the next 3 years, I watched my wife perform with the symphony, the North Oregon Coast Symphony, and I'd be sitting in the audience enjoying it, watching the conductor, at the time Colin Heed conducting. And of course, with technology nowadays, you can pretty much watch anything, any orchestral performance you want. And just seeing some of these interesting conductors on the stages, some of them very, very still, very taught about how they're conducting, and then others that are all over the place really getting into it. And I believe the inspiration just came from watching all these different people conducting. And the less I started to play, I'm a trumpet player.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the trumpet, but
26 years here. But the less I started to play trumpet and the more I started to just listen, just enjoy it, I started to find out that my enjoyment of actually conducting became more prominent than playing.
Yeah, you know, it's got to exercise a different part of the brain than playing the trumpet, I guess.
Definitely feel a whole different emotion when conducting than playing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and can you remember that time, and I don't know how long ago it was, and you said, you know, it's not just, I just don't want to play. I want to make a life, a professional life in music. You know, that's quite a different thing. Mm-hmm. There's lots of people take lessons as mm-hmm. a kid and go on and do, you know, high school and into college. That's quite a different thing than saying, this is going to be my professional life.
Well, it's a struggle because going through college right off the bat, you know, music as an arts program in public school districts is always something you got to fight for at all times. So both my wife and I, who are both music teachers, same thing. We were going to college together, and we both wanted to be teachers. And at the time, I was playing a lot of baseball, but also still dabbling in the music, and I had to make a decision which one I really wanted to go for. And so having more experiences with the music, I was feeling more fulfillment through playing my trumpet and gaining a whole bunch of friends and understanding of the different concepts, which became more interesting to me. And through all that and all the different performances, I thought, you know, this is something I can do for the rest of my life. It could be pretty fun. And throw in the mix with working with kids, with the youth, which is a huge part of what my wife and I that's the biggest part of our inspiration for doing music in the general sense has always been the youth. And between that and the love for music, that's how we went to education. And then the conducting thing came into play, and that's a whole other 50% of my life outside of teaching education. Everything just comes together, and now I don't think I can even escape music. I can't even sleep without thinking about music.
Does your experience as a teacher inform your conducting? I mean, it's not a similar skill, but it's a compatible skill.
It's incredibly compatible because when I'm going to these festivals with my high school band and I'm talking to instructors who have been teaching for 30, 40 years, I'm learning a whole bunch of material that works with blend and balances with ensembles in general. And so I like to think that I have more of an upper hand than the average person just jumping into conducting, because I actually get to work with individuals who have been in this business for a long, long time. And not only do I get to experience doing it with these groups, but with my groups at school every single day for hours and hours and hours. So what I was doing 7 years ago when I started doing this is completely not what I'm doing right now. I have changed the way I work with adults, kids, and how myself included with music.
So your teaching style has actually changed.
Oh, drastically. If I showed you a video, if I had one of year one versus this is my eighth year right now, yeah, I'm not the same director at all.
Can you give an example?
Well, let's see. Starting out in Jewel, there was no music program. So when I got there, my first instinct was to get the kids excited and get them in the instruments. And I had 11 kids at the time. And just getting a sound out of it, what I thought was a beautiful sound from them. It turned out as we're going through our festivals and whatnot, I'd be getting comments that, you know, great energy, but the sound is kind of, it doesn't meld very well together. It just sounds like what the individual's playing. Up to now where we're at this year with my high school band, competing hopefully for state championships. We'll find out tomorrow. We made the tape pool. It's all the comments from the judges saying, great balance, beautiful balance. We can hear every instrument, but they're all working together. The shaping, the phrasing of the music is there. And now they're having me fine-tune other things that have never been something that they would even remotely talk to me about because we hadn't acquired that skill set yet. So I know from the last 7 years that I have acquired a certain skill set to listen to it and know where to find it and then how to garnish that out of the kids all the way through, which then I use with my ensembles outside of school.
Our guest this morning on Neocon View is Corey Peterson. He is the music director of the North Oregon Coast Symphony Orchestra. Mm-hmm. You said that prior to your arrival, there was no music program in Jewel?
Nope, it was. Well,
really?
I got to rephrase that. There was a small one. What it was individual lessons. It was a studio where they had, I remember opening the filing cabinet of the previous music teacher who had been there, and there is a list of, probably about 50, 60 kids on a waiting list to learn one instrument, and the average instrument was guitar, piano, and snare drum, and those were the three main instruments, and I looked at the list after I got hired, and it said that only 11 kids were allowed, 11 or 12 kids were taking actually private lessons, and the rest of the 50, whatever, 40 kids didn't get to do music. And so that's when I said, no, everybody, every child should be able to experience music beyond just third and fourth grade. And so that's how we started from 11 kids, and we're up to, about 75 kids.
Excellent.
And the district's only 150 kids, K through 12, so that's half the school.
We could probably talk all day about the struggle to maintain all the various arts programs in the schools. Is that an issue? Do you feel like you're having to fight some sort of a battle every year when budgeting comes around?
Unfortunately, for many directors, it is. And I try not to speak too publicly about it. My school district is funded by the timber industry, only, I believe, the second one in the whole state of Oregon. So we have a multi-million dollar budget. So I have no issues with the funding for the music program in the Jewel School District. It's well-funded. But if you go, for example, just down the road to my wife's school in Astoria, it's pretty much basic as it is other school districts where the funding is very, very minimal, and they have to fight and have to claw, and they have to pay oftentimes, like most teachers, for certain supplies and materials and make do with what they've had for 10, 15, 20 years and make it work.
Well, about your own education, you said you went to school WSU
and Portland State University.
Did you take conducting classes? And even if you did, how much does that prepare you for the real world?
I took the one. I had two classes, and then poor professor had abruptly passed on, sadly, and that was it. And so by the time I came out here to the coast, the only real reason I got involved with conducting was my wife and I decided to start a youth symphony, another community symphony, and that took hold. That also was from scratch with just a few kids, and she would conduct half the pieces. I would conduct the other half, and I'd play violin while she would be conducting, and then vice versa. She played violin while I conducted, and over time, we changed the symphony into a different ensemble with more adults coming in, and my wife said, Corey, it's all yours. I'm not really enjoying conducting anyways, so you can have it all. And so I took hold of that, and now it's that symphony is a whole other beast on its own. So,
do you have favorite conductors?
You know, I figured you're going to ask that question.
It's a trick question, but not really.
Well, I feel kind of like I tell my kids I should put my dunce hat on, because I don't really, like I said, YouTube is a big source nowadays, and so I do have a favorite conductor, but if I honestly had to tell you what his name was, I cannot see him. All I can tell you is he conducts the complete opposite way that I was taught in college. And when he conducts, his hands are so low. I mean, he conducts with his hands almost down by his belly button, by his waist, that I don't honestly see how anybody beyond the front row could even see him. But the orchestra responds to him so well, and the audience receives his work just wonderfully. But as for his name, I feel like my dunce hat should be put on because I cannot recall it.
Well, you know, there's so many different styles of conducting from that. Oh, yeah. So as you said, sort of minimalist approach to making the grand gestures. And I think some of the larger stuff is sort of out of style now. It's you know, for that matter, the conductor is autocrat, really, is out of style. It really is a collaborative process mm-hmm. these days.
Well, it is. And it's interesting because my conducting has also changed from the fact where I like to move a lot. I always like to get involved with the music, with my body. I mean, I really get excited to the point where sometimes I got to calm down and be more reserved and realize that it's more between the actual conductor and the musicians than anything else. So I can't be too much part of the show and get carried away with it. And that's a growth spot for me also, is learning that, you know, hold off, Mr. Peterson. you can get too excited about this, so hold it for the big moments, but don't make this all about the conductor at certain points. And that's been a learning curve for me, which I've been being more aware of over the last couple of years here.
It's also a matter of shaping what you want the score to sound like, and mm-hmm. not just look at individual passages and notes, but the arc of a piece of music.
True, and that's also the trust with the members who are playing underneath you. You gotta build that trust to some extent, and also when you're the new person coming into an organization, you have to build that trust, and you have to be able to stand in front of them and work with them, and hopefully they'll be able to follow you and trust what you're trying to do, because not all the time all the musicians can hear what you hear up front, and so a lot of it is trust between everybody.
So I take it just in meeting you, mm-hmm. I mean, are you the nice guy conductor? You're not the autocrat conductor. Again, that doesn't really work anymore, right? Like, or are you the nice guy conductor until you have to be something else?
Yeah, you're getting closer there. I tell everybody else, I like to believe, and most people I think would agree with me, I'm a very nice individual. I'm very pleasant to work with. I do not believe at any moment when you're working with a group of people, you're going to get the best out of them. You're not going to get the best sound out of them. If you're that harsh individual who... isn't pleasant to work with, let me put it that way. There's going to be mistakes. There's going to be disagreements and whatnot. If I need to be firm, I'm going to be firm, but I'm going to do it respectfully and politely. And, you know, I ask the same thing from my musicians as well. There's a lot of work being put on by both ends, and I respect that, and vice versa. And I think that's how everybody works well together.
You know, a lot of it is literally listening to each other, not just listening to the words, but obviously listening to the music.
My favorite saying is, you need to listen louder than you play.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Our guest this morning on Neocon View is Corey Peterson. He is the conductor of the North Oregon Coast Symphony Orchestra. They have two concerts coming up this week. There is a Friday concert in Astoria, and then the concert on Sunday in Rockaway in North Tillamook County. Mm-hmm. The concert itself, the program,
mm-hmm. titled Expressions of Love. And my wife and I, part of this comes from a lot of different things, relationships with all sorts of things. For example, we just had our first child here.
Congratulations.
Thank you. 10 months ago. And that was... interesting. First and foremost, me and my wife, the relationship we had prior to having a child is completely different now. I mean, things have changed, and now actually having a daughter, the same relationship is also something unique to us. And then we look at our friends and friendships amongst different people, and also in the terms of music, the different relationships that you hear between the instruments is also very unique. So the selections we have come up with for this season are, to me, it's all about the relationship between instruments and people and love and whatnot. And so we're going to be performing a little bit of Tchaikovsky's Romeo and Juliet Overture. Yeah, I don't know if I need to explain anything about that. Hopefully most people know at this point a little bit about that.
Even if they wouldn't know the name, as soon as they hear a few notes,
they'll
know it.
Feel right off from the very beginning. We have a Verdi piece titled Preludio, and it's for our lead cello player, Judy Woodward, and she's going to be doing the concerto piece with the orchestra. And so there's another relationship where she's really, she's put a lot of work into this, and it's an absolutely beautiful cello selection for her. And the relationship that she puts forth with the orchestra is very mesmerizing, per se.
That's a really interesting piece, too, because it is a concerto of sorts, but mm-hmm. it's really written as the overture to an opera, which is, you know, the unintended connection there.
Very true. And trying to find this selection... written out for full orchestra was really challenging because there are no parts for this one. We had to actually write all the individual parts in the orchestras out by hand. So if you're at the concert watching, you're going to notice all the musicians have handwritten music All that exists was the score that we could find. So that's a beautiful one. We also have another selection titled Asturias. And Asturias is by Isaac Albéniz, which is actually a selection originally for piano. It was a classical piano selection, and it's more famous for classical guitar nowadays. And we're going to be utilizing that for the orchestra. And once again, it's a beautiful relationship there between rhythms. You're going to see the relationship being passed all the way through the orchestra. It's a 16th note pattern that if played perfectly, which is a challenge, we're still working on this as we wind down towards the concert here. But it's absolutely just a wonderful experience between the relationship with the orchestra and how they pass the rhythms off to each other here. So that's where we're. Oh, and I'm sorry, I forgot to mention. We're still moving forward with brass ensembles. We have a woodwind ensemble and a chamber ensemble that's going to take forth the beginning of the concert. And all three sections, we did this for the last season. It's a way to showcase the different members of the orchestra up front for the audience so they get to see the different instruments and the players of the North Oregon Coast Symphony right up front. And they get a little more intimate feeling with these individuals. And then for the second half of the program, we put them all together for the full orchestra selections.
Well, I really like the little shaking out there, because not so much anymore, but, you know, it used to be a concert was something like overture, concerto, big symphony, mm-hmm. you know, and that's pretty much the template of a typical symphony concert, which is fine, but it's predictable, and it doesn't allow you the flexibility of, as you are doing in this concert, having a variety of ensemble sizes.
Oh yeah, well I agree with you. It's for the small ensembles. I know the North Oregon Coast had a chamber group out here for a while, and then it's been extinct for probably 4 or 5 years. But I agree with you. I think a lot of ensembles kind of go through the same. I'm not trying to be negative here, but the same pattern over and over. And anyone that has worked underneath me knows that after about 3 or 4 years, I like to switch things up because it can get predictable. And I think one of the worst things that can happen to any ensemble, any business, is to become predictable. And for me, this is, as much as it's about music, it's also a business, and we got to keep it moving forward. So as I say, the youth and whatnot, and I don't mean like 5, 6 year olds, but I mean teenagers and whatnot, you're going to notice that one of my pushes is to have more of the involvement from the community and families coming out to these concerts. This is not just for the older folk in town. This is an entire family event. And I think it's important that you take a moment where you may take a grandparent or a parent in general and just say to their grandchild or son or daughter, you know, I'm going to take you out of the symphony concert. I want to expose you to something a little bit interesting, a little more different that you may not have notice of, you know, in your surroundings on everyday life. And I think it's just a connection that if the grown-ups can bring these youngsters in here, it'll enlighten them a little bit more and say, wait a minute, you know, that was kind of interesting. That's fun.
I'm glad you said that, because I've attended some of the concerts with the North Oregon Coast Symphony. Mm-hmm. And what's really great is I see families that, you know, that bring the kids, mm-hmm. and they are there, and you know, they may be on somebody's lap, and they're, you know, they're competing with you because they're kind of conducting, and yeah. you know, they're really into the music in a way that, frankly, even in a, you know, a fully professional orchestra in a concert hall where everybody has made a night of it and they're sitting in neat little rows,
mm-hmm.
it's fine, and you, I'm not arguing against full symphony orchestras in right. concert halls, but there's something really joyous about music making when you've got that kind of mix there, and people mm-hmm. are really into it, and there are kids in the audience who are, for whom this is a first experience.
Yeah.
It's really exciting.
Well, and also getting up close and seeing the instruments that, you know, sometimes in the full orchestra, again, you may only see the string instruments. You have no idea. You see a glimpse of the brass and the woodwinds and even percussion, but having them up front and actually experiencing it up front and hearing the beautiful sounds, as you said, and the interaction between all the instruments is inspiring. And I think our last concert, I can still remember off to our left-hand side, I remember seeing, I think, two girls, sisters, I believe, from a family here, and just watching their expressions as sitting in the audience, watching one of the brass or the woodwinds ensemble, I can't remember at the moment here, just watching them, sitting there engaged and just sitting there still. And you can see the look on their face. The imagination was going, which is wonderful. Just for everyone in that audience, it's amazing just to sit there and think, what is everyone thinking at this moment? What is going on in their mind? Because if there's anything that can put music and stories in, excuse me, imagination and stories into your head, I honestly believe classical music can pull pretty much anything out of anybody at any point.
Our guest is Corey Peterson, the conductor of the North Oregon Coast Symphony Orchestra. Well, let's see, Corey, we have talked a little bit about the music, and we've talked about you, and we've talked about the audiences. The other component is, of course, the musicians. Mm-hmm. Who are the musicians of the North Oregon Coast Symphony?
Well, it's a wonderful thing. These individuals, they're volunteers. That's a very important thing to remember. These are individuals who are retired or working, and many of these come from all different spans of the state and also Washington. We've got some people from all the way from Oysterville coming down, all the way down to, as you mentioned, Manzanita, and Pacific City is our newest member trombone player. And we have some that come all the way in from, let's see, all the way, Jewel, I think, even Hillsborough. Maybe that was last season. I cannot remember.
So they're making a real commitment to...
Well, this is a commitment. It's, once a week in Cannon Beach for 2 hours on every Tuesday evening. And that's also challenging for these individuals because they get off work. They've got to travel to a central location. And once we're concluded here, a lot of individuals have an hour to an hour and a half drive just to get back home. So it's these individuals put a lot of work into this, a lot of time, let me put it that way. But it wouldn't happen without these individuals. And as we said before, the one of the missions of North Oregon Coast Symphony is to keep classical music alive. And every organization has their ups and downs. I don't care who you're talking about. We all have those moments. And for me, instilling in the members that when those challenging moments come forth, you need to stand tall. Absolutely stand tall. And no matter what happens, things will rebound. And this orchestra, is like anything else, has had its ups and downs. And currently we're doing absolutely wonderful. And if that isn't a plug to put in there for musicians, we're always looking for musicians. So I'm gonna put a cheap plug in there and say, by all means, we do need musicians. We look for every season we look for some, and string players, by all means, everyone along the coast. It's that's the hardest instruments to find are string players, and
really because I would I would think that there would be a good number of string players out there who. You have plenty of brass and
brass wise, we have pretty much all the brass. We're short, I think, a horn player and a trombone player and a tuba player, so about three brass players.
But these things ebb and flow too, you know.
Definitely. Right. Yeah, percussion always. We could always use another percussion player. We have one stronghold, but we could use another one. Woodwinds, we're pretty much short an oboist, which is what we're looking for currently. And then besides that, string players, yes, we're hurting for strings. We have a decent-sized double bass section and cello section, but we're hurting in the viola and definitely violins. We could use, I don't think we could use enough, let me put it that way.
it's got to be a great chance for somebody who played in high school or college mm-hmm. or even beyond that has put down the instrument and gone on with some mm-hmm. other course of their life to kind of come back to it and reconnect with the instrument and with the music.
Well, we've acquired five string players in every different instrument, violin, viola, cello, and bass just the last 6 months. And part of the wonderful thing is during the chamber string stuff, the small ensemble stuff, that's a great place to showcase it, even to jump in, to buddy up next to somebody who's pretty competent about what they're doing. And don't feel shy. If you're going to make mistakes, this is, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. And all I ask you to do is just continue practicing, work on it, and we're going to get through it.
You mentioned just a few minutes ago the notion of keeping classical music alive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, boy. How's it doing?
Not well. I honestly do not believe it's going very well. We have, in today's world, with the amount of technology, as I keep mentioning to a lot of people, in the hands of pretty much everybody. There's a report, iPhones are now in the hands of even six-year-olds, which is astonishing. We have access to every genre of music on this planet, pretty much here in the United States, for every single child and adult. And it's just sad when I work with kids K through 12, when I start bringing up in the last few years more about different composers of the classical era, Beethoven is the number one individual that majority of the kids hear about. But when I say Mozart, I am astonished by how many kids do not know who Mozart is, never even heard of his name. Haydn, here's another one. I could list off a whole different list of people. And so it's struggling. I think it's a struggle to acquire individuals. Especially, even the middle-aged, the parents of today, who used to be kids, you know, only 10, 15, 20 years ago. I think even getting them into the concert hall is interesting, and that's where I want to push with a lot of members of the classical symphony is that if you continue to push the concerts in the same general manner that we've been pushing for the last 60, 70, 80 years, you're not going to be acquiring anybody new. You've got technology. We need to be using that technology to access those individuals that only, I hate to say it, communicate that way or do a lot of their research in that direction. And so for me personally, when I'm working with my high school kids, we did for a festival competition 1812 Overture, Tchaikovsky also. And before we even played it, I sat them down and said, today's going to be history class. And I sat down and we showed them a little bit about the French Napoleon, and we led all the way up to Moscow in Russia and whatnot, and did a whole spiel in that whole 55-minute class period about the reason why the 1812 Overture was written and what it meant. And then I put it on form. With the whole mindset, I did a whole, a slideshow presentation and whatnot. We kept some of the slides up there, and just the way the kids sat there, leaned up in their chairs and were listening, and then I put the music in front of them for the first time and said, here we go. We're going to do this. And to watch them over the course of 3 months putting this, it's a very large piece for them, it was about 12 minutes long, and to watch them put that together, the amount of pride they had out of them when they were finished, it sounded like, well, it was horrible sounding, let me put it that, the first time we played it ever to the final product was just stand up and salute the kids. I was amazed, and they're very proud of it. And when we finished, I said, so how do you feel about, you know, pulling out another classical piece of music for next year? And all the hands went up. Yeah, we want to do this. And that's the type of excitement I think we need to make that connection to the youth who, honestly, technology has allowed people to be kind of lazy with some of that stuff, but make that connection to what the music is actually about. Why were these individuals writing music like this back then? And just don't play the music. Just do not play it. You explain it to people and make it mean something. And I think that connection is what's going to excite more and more people.
And yet the irony is, as you mentioned at the beginning with your YouTube experience, there has never been any time in history in which more music is available to more people. It's just a matter of being able to not access it. It's easy enough to access mm-hmm. it, but to be motivated to access it.
It's just frustrating because it's all
it's there.
It's right
out there.
There.
It's all out there. It's it's not hard. And, you know, there are all these recordings of obscure composers that a generation ago that nobody would be listening
true,
to,
yes.
except that they're now available to us. I mean, like the catalog is way deep.
Oh, yes.
It's just
it is.
You got to get people interested in it.
And there's a lot of talented composers out there, like you said, never heard about until the last, who knows, 10 years.
Well, this is a great opportunity to sample some music. Mm-hmm. The concert with the North Oregon Coast Symphony, there's a concert this Friday in Astoria and Sunday in Rockaway Beach. And for more information on the wheres and hows and all of that, probably the website is the best place to go.
Currently, yes, nocsymphony.org. And also, if you'd like to email, you can also email nocscory@gmail.com. And I'll be happy to answer any questions.
And there's music by Tchaikovsky, by Verdi, by Albanith. Sounds like it's going to be a great concert.
It's going to be fun.
Our guest this morning on Neocony View is the conductor of the North Oregon Coast Symphony, Corey Peterson. Corey, great pleasure, and have a great concert.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. And we will see you next month on Neocony View.